This case is a chilling one. A teenage girl receives a seemingly innocent friend request on Facebook. Believing she knows the person, she accepts, leading to weeks of online conversations. Eventually, they decide to meet in person. Sadly, that was the last time she was seen. Her disappearance sparked a frantic search, leaving everyone wondering what had happened to this teen. Who was behind the screen, and what led to her sudden disappearance?
Is she in water?
I don't know.
Is she in the woods?
I don't know.
Is she underground?
Before we begin, we would like to send our deepest sympathies to the family and loved ones of Nicole Cable, a young life taken far too soon. It was Mother's Day, May the 12th, 2013. The family of 15-year-old Nicole Cable had settled in for the evening just before 9 p.m. Her mother, Christine Wiley, had spent the day with her family, being treated to all the good things a good mom should get on her special day, including a handmade card from her oldest daughter, the first card she had ever made for her mom. It was a mild Sunday night with gusty winds. A light rain had fallen for a few minutes before 9 p.m. It was the time when most people's thoughts would be turning to bed in preparation for what Monday would bring. Glen Burn in Penobscot County, just outside of Bangor, Maine, is certainly a quiet place on a night such as this one. Nicole emerged from her room and told her mom that a friend of hers, Brian Butterfield, was going to drop something off for her, and she wanted to go meet him at the end of the driveway. Her mom, knowing of Brian but having never met him before, reminded her of the rules of not going anywhere with him, and then let her go to meet him. Christine Wiley went on to bed, never suspecting what was about to happen. The young girl walked down the driveway just out of sight from the house and then vanished. No one in the home would know she was gone until the next morning when it was time for her to get ready for school. Something had happened on that lonely stretch of quiet road, something terrible. Christine would tell investigators that normally she took Nicole to school in the mornings, but Nicole wasn't up and getting ready when her mom came out of her bedroom. She shouted for her daughter, but Nicole didn't answer. They were already running late. She looked in her room, and she wasn't there, or anywhere else in the house to be found. Knowing that, like so many teenagers, Nicole was never far from her cell phone, she immediately tried to call. Nothing. It went straight to voicemail. Texts, Nicole's favorite means of communicating with friends and family, went unanswered as well.
We woke up at like 7:15, which is really late because that's what time Nicole and I need to be leaving the house. I went out into the living room, no TV on. It was so quiet. And I said, Jason, there's something wrong. Nicole's not here. Nicole's gone. While he's looking outside, I'm calling her cell phone, and it's just going right to voicemail.
No one knew where she was. One friend, according to an affidavit, said that she had received a text from Nicole at 9:18 p.m. on Sunday night saying the girl was meeting Brian Butterfield at the end of the driveway, but there wasn't a follow-up text from her. Frantic, Nicole's mother called the Penobscot County Sheriff's Office at 8:27 a.m. Monday morning to report that her daughter was missing. She was told that Nicole had not been gone long enough to be considered as missing yet, and that many times, especially with teenagers, they would turn up before long, having snuck out for the night. And many law enforcement agencies have gotten rid of the 24-hour waiting period to declare someone missing. Too many horrible cases have happened where that day of waiting could have averted trouble for the antiquated rule to remain. Yet in Penobscot County, law enforcement wanted to wait it out. Christine Wiley wasn't going to, though. She immediately gathered photos of her daughter and put together missing persons posters and began printing them out. She, friends, and family members began putting them up around town. She would then alert the local media to make a plea to the public for help and to beg for Nicole to come back home if she was able to.
This is my daughter.
You're scared because you ran away. You're not in trouble. Just come home. It'll be okay. And if somebody has her, I don't care. Just take her to a gas station, a park, anywhere. Whatever's going on. I don't know what to say. We're waiting for you. I'm waiting for you to call me.
The next day, the Penobscot County Sheriff's Office would enter the case and begin their search in earnest. They didn't spare any resources and began immediately canvassing the community, speaking to friends of Nicole and alerting state resources to be on the lookout for the young woman.
As you know and heard earlier that on Monday, the 13th, the Penobscot County Sheriff's Office responded to a missing person report. Christine Wiley reported that her 15-year-old daughter, Nicole Cable, was last seen on Sunday evening at her Glenburn home. Sheriff's deputies released a statewide attempt to locate, file, and conducted several interviews and leads with the help of Nicole's family and friends. As the investigations progressed, several other agencies were brought in for assistance. Our agency has utilized assistance from federal, state, county, and municipal agencies. We want the public to know we are using every available resource necessary to help locate Nicole.
The two most important initial steps they took were looking into Brian Butterfield and checking the electronic trail that Nicole had left behind. Thanks to Nicole's friend, investigators were able to find out that Butterfield lived on Bolling Drive in nearby Bangor, Maine, just some 20 minutes south of the Wiley residence. Detective Andy Whitehouse of the Penobscot County Sheriff's Office would interview Butterfield on Tuesday morning. 19-year-old Brian Butterfield, it turns out, had gone to high school with Nicole and he knew her. He had graduated from the Old Town High School the year before, and while the two had been friends, it had been several weeks since she had talked to him.
The Brian Butterfield that the deputy was speaking to looked absolutely nothing like the Brian Butterfield that Nicole had been communicating with. There was no resemblance whatsoever. You can tell sometimes when someone has no idea what you're talking about. Brian Butterfield knew absolutely nothing about what he was referring to and about his communication with Nicole.
As Detective Whitehouse questioned Butterfield, a detective from the Bangor Police Department, Brent Bolio, began looking into the electronic trail Nicole would have left behind on social media and from her cell phone texts and calls. There would be a sizable social media trail left behind by Nicole and just as large of one for her phone records. Nicole, like so many teenagers, was very into social media at the time. Facebook was a vibrant and vital meeting place for young people online. She had massive numbers of friends and actively stayed involved in discussions with them. She even met potential boyfriends there. One that had stood out recently was Brian Butterfield. Butterfield had connected online with Nicole just as she was getting out of a difficult relationship. He had been supportive and interested in her, and from all appearances, she was smitten with him. As the old relationship faded away, one filled with jealousy and a dangerous love triangle, Butterfield had swept in and set the girl's heart on a different path. As Detective Beaulieu was finding out from Nicole's Facebook account, her counterpart interviewing Butterfield was finding out some very important information. This wasn't the actual Brian Butterfield that Nicole had been chatting with. It was an imposter. The imposter had copied every bit of basic information from Brian Butterfield's own account, but the behind-the-scenes information was linked to someone else. As Detective Beaulieu sent search warrants and subpoena requests to Facebook to find out who had registered the account, Detective Whitehouse asked Butterfield straight up if he had any idea who would want to pretend to be him, particularly in the case of Nicole Cable. Butterfield told him that, yes, he did have an idea. According to the affidavit, Butterfield told him another graduate from Old Town High School, Kyle Duby, had recently been involved with Nicole and that even though the two had called it quits, Kyle was still obsessed with her and wanted to have sex with her. That he was 20 and Nicole was only 15 didn't seem to bother Kyle, although Nicole had been able to ward off his advances. The fake Butterfield account, the other detective found out, was the one that had contacted her that night and asked to meet him at the end of the driveway. The message from the false Butterfield said that he had some marijuana for Nicole, according to the affidavit. Facebook quickly replied to the emergency request for records on the fake Brian Butterfield account, and what they learned was very important. The very morning after Nicole's disappearance, the account was terminated. They were able to provide an IP address from which they could figure out where it had originated and also the last four digits of the phone number used to verify the account. The IP address and the phone number both matched up with those held by Kyle Duby or his family. The IP address, according to the local internet provider, was registered to Greg Duby, Kyle's father, and was assigned to their home at 5 Maplewood Street in Orono, Maine. Detectives would be dispatched to the home to question Kyle about what he knew. So now, we come to Kyle. In the community, Kyle had been a small-time troublemaker, twice being caught for attempted unauthorized transfer or theft of an automobile, or for being caught with a loaded firearm or crossbow in his vehicle. He paid fines for the offenses, but those had been a couple of years before. In recent years, he had been raising his 4-year-old daughter in his parents' home and had been attending Eastern Maine Community College. There, he was studying automotive repair while working at a local gas station and as a home health care provider for a disabled person. He seemed to be getting his life on track, except at the time detectives arrived at the Duby residence, Kyle was already known to them. He was just days from having to report to the Penobscot County Jail in Bangor to begin serving a 90-day jail term for a motorcycle chase and crash that had resulted in charges of eluding police officers, driving to endanger, and criminal speeding. According to the police accounts from that event, Kyle had decided to lead police on a chase along Interstate 95 from Orono to Howland, Maine. During the chase, speeds got up to 150 miles an hour. He evaded at least two partial roadblocks before deciding to take a ramp off the highway to the town of Howland. As he approached the end of the ramp, he collided with a police cruiser. After he was arrested, Kyle refused to be taken to the hospital to check for injuries. Kyle had just received his motorcycle learner's permit just 3 days prior to the chase. Local police were more than somewhat familiar with Kyle, to say the least. He was definitely a person of interest in this case as well, leaning to being a full suspect, but there were still so many questions left unanswered. There was also the matter of his girlfriend who lived with him and his family, Sarah Mersinger. Nicole and Kyle had struck up a friendship on Facebook, apparently having known each other from her earliest high school days that coincided with his last year there. She had just been a freshman then, but in the intervening year online, she had blossomed, perhaps even more than she had in real life. Friendship turned to mutual interest, and before long, Kyle came to meet her parents, a requirement set by her mom before Nicole would be allowed to go out with anyone. The two did go out a few times, and he even brought her home to meet his 4-year-old daughter, Savannah. Allegedly, the meeting went well until Sarah returned home and confronted Nicole, chasing the young girl away. Over the next few days, Sarah would send numerous texts threatening Nicole with violence if she was ever caught talking to Kyle again. At one point, on Kyle's Facebook page, he, or possibly Sarah writing as him, posted the following statement with these misspellings. Investigators said online evidence showed that she had cut ties with Kyle and the two quit communicating. There was no mention of Nicole by Kyle up until the day after her disappearance when he added her missing persons poster to his Facebook page and then offered to babysit for Christine Wiley's youngest daughter while the mom was involved in the search efforts. As online evidence was sifted through and preliminary investigations and interviews were conducted, searches began throughout the community. Not only did local and state agencies begin searching for Nicole, volunteers turned out in droves to sweep the community, both within the towns and the city, as well as the wilderness areas nearby. All told, some 500 people were involved in the search for this girl, a search that became more desperate as each hour and day passed. On Tuesday evening, May the 14th, the first pieces of physical evidence were found. Detective Bill Flagg, while searching the wooded areas off of Spruce Lane, just down from Nicole's home, found a dark blue knit hat with holes cut in it to make a mask, a sock, and a black sneaker, all apparently tossed away near the road's intersection with Route 221. The three items were quickly bagged and sent straight to the Maine State Police Crime Lab to be analyzed. At 9:10 the next morning, Kyle Duby was interviewed by Maine State Police Major Crimes Unit officers in Bangor, Maine. The interview was conducted by Detective Jay Pelletier and Detective Thomas Pickering.
We know that Brian Butterfield was created from a computer at your home, and we know this. We know that that account was accessed from your cell phone to contact Nicole. Those messages came from your phone. All 120 logins to Brian Butterfield's account came in from your phone.
I've never, ever logged on to a Brian Butterfield account.
Have you ever seen this before? Does that look familiar to you at all? It should, because it has your DNA on it.
Is she in water?
I don't know.
Is she in the woods?
No.
Is she underground?
Detectives know that while there is some evidence pointing to Kyle, there are still loose ends out there, the most important of which was that Nicole still hadn't been found, either alive or dead. They also knew that Kyle would be reporting to the local jail for his sentence in the next couple of days. They watched him, and the young man does nothing unexpected, and no new clues turn up. On the appointed day, Kyle is dropped off at the Penobscot County Jail by his parents. Glenn Ross, who was the Penobscot County Sheriff at the time, said Kyle was crying throughout the process and was so inconsolable and despondent that after Kyle was processed into the system, he was immediately segregated from the rest of the jail populace and placed on suicide watch. Sometimes young offenders are completely overwhelmed emotionally when they begin to serve their sentences as their bad decision comes crashing home. Perhaps this was what had happened to Kyle, or perhaps he was carrying something even bigger in his heart. As Kyle stewed in a jail cell, it was time for Sarah to sell him out. Records show that on Monday, May the 20th, Detective Jennifer Fisk interviewed Sarah and found out that Kyle had told her that he had killed Nicole and disposed of her body. She said that he had driven her out of town past the old Dysart's gas station in Old Town, over a bridge, and turned off the road to the left to follow the shore near a dam. He said he had left her body in a clearing, covered with branches and leaves. On the way back, she said, Kyle had thrown Nicole's clothes out of the window of the truck he was driving. At the same time Sarah was being interviewed, Detective Pelletier was speaking with Kyle's brother. He corroborated Sarah's story and added more details. He painted a very stark picture of what happened that night. Kyle, using the fake Brian Butterfield persona, had lured Nicole out to the end of the driveway on that dark night. His intention was not to kill her, but to lay in wait for her. When she arrived, he, wearing a dark mask, leapt out and grabbed her in the darkness. She struggled, and he choked her, not intending to kill her, but to render her unconscious. He then duct-taped her mouth and body, loaded her into the back of the pickup truck he had borrowed from his father, and took her to where he intended to conceal her. Apparently, Kyle had the crazy idea to kidnap the girl while masked, stash her away in the woods, and then participate in hunting for her, knowing full well where she was hidden. He had planned to be the first to find her and rescue her, becoming a hero in the process. Except, Kyle never expected her to fight for her life as hard as she did. Her jacket tore, and she dug her fingernails into the skin on Kyle's face. He fought back and strangled too hard for too long. As he applied the duct tape, he could tell that she was dead. So he dumped the body where he had planned and disposed of evidence poorly along the way. Kyle, already sitting in the county jail, would be further arrested and formally charged with the murder of Nicole Cable. At 9:30 p.m. that day, a game warden working with a search dog would find Nicole's body hidden under a pile of branches and leaves.
Jason had got a phone call from the police. He went out and talked with them. They had come up, and Jason had put his arm around me, and I had looked at them, and I said, "Did you find her?" And they just nodded, but with the way they nodded, I knew he didn't have to say anything.
DNA tests on articles of clothing found near the Wiley home would prove to be from Nicole. The makeshift mask matched DNA that was obtained from Kyle during his prior arrest. Even a modestly skilled defense attorney would point to the possibility that Kyle could have been the scapegoat for a plan hatched by his very jealous girlfriend. Such a conjecture might have been argued in court, with nods to her having access to his Facebook account and his cell phone at times, and her run-ins with Nicole in the past. At his arraignment, Kyle would plead not guilty to kidnapping and murdering Nicole Cable.
It's going to be a long haul. We have not received really any discovery yet. There's a lot of information that has to be processed. I can't imagine this case is going to be tried inside of 6 months. I just want to caution the public that, again, only one side has been told here, and that we believe there's at least a couple of other theories floating around out there as to what really happened.
And yet, Kyle showed yet again that while in jail, he had no idea that any action he ever took could have consequences and repercussions for him. To pass his time in jail, Kyle and another inmate took part in what is called phishing. It is a method of passing notes back and forth between one jail cell to another as they tie a piece of paper to a string and then toss it across the hallway to the cell of another person. One writes on the note, and then it gets pulled back and answered, and it goes on and on. Over a couple of days, Kyle had managed to basically write the full story of what had happened that night, even going as far as to draw diagrams of how he used the pocket knife to scrape under Nicole's fingernails to remove any of his skin that might be stuck there. Tiny remnants under the nails gave up the DNA that matched Kyle's. Defense attorneys attempted to have the writings disallowed to the jury, even after two former co-workers and Kyle's own father, who were familiar with the man's barely legible handwriting, testified that the documents were certainly written by Kyle. It didn't matter, for the DNA and electronic evidence, which included Kyle's own cell phone pings on that night of the disappearance, put him at Nicole's house and at the place where he hid her, making it clear that the man was guilty. State prosecutors offered a plea deal to Kyle to spare Nicole's family from having to go through the court case. Kyle rejected the offer. The trial lasted 9 days.
He brutally murdered a 15-year-old girl, left her like a piece of garbage out in the woods, didn't take it seriously then. And throughout these proceedings, he didn't take it seriously. If the court agrees with our recommendation, he'll never set foot outside again.
Kyle Duby was found guilty on all counts.
I just felt like I just wanted him to, at that moment, take some responsibility, so show some remorse. He's shown remorse for himself only. He hasn't shown remorse or compassion for what he did to Nicole, what he's put her family and friends through. It's about him. For him, it's all about him and nobody else. And that, it's, again, that just shows just
how evil he is. He's evil. I believe he's just pure evil.
Kyle may never take a free breath again during his life, or perhaps he will see freedom, but as a very, very old man. He took away the life of a young, vibrant girl, a life that will be sorely missed by the friends and family members left behind. If you find this video compelling, you might want to watch these other similar videos.